Good morning.
Greetings, everyone.
Who are you? Who's your little
Boobo? Figured Boobo should make a little appearance for the final episode of 2021 here. We've got Boobo and we've got anti-Boobo.
Nubo.
So for those of you that aren't aware, Boobo is our robot bird mascot.
Mm-hmm.
Boobo controls an entire division of robot birds. So it's very busy most of the time, but dropped in to say hello.
And, you know, the nice thing is, people don't often know this, there are factions among the robot birds, and Boobo is part of one of the Friends of Humanity. So yes. That squadron of robot birds is trying to engage in counter-surveillance.
Yes, they're surveilling the other robot birds.
Yeah, so if, according to Boobo, if you're in Wichita, be careful. You know, the evil robot birds know what you're planning.
They do. Good morning to folks that are saying greetings to us. Mm-hmm. Michelle, Susan, Ellen.
Yeah.
So today we're wrapping up 2021. Thank God.
I don't know if I want to, you know what though? 2022.
Yeah, it could always be worse.
I saw this meme, and I don't know how old it is. You know, sometimes memes come around, and by the time it gets to you, it's a little late. But apparently, Russian scientists thawed out some like prehistoric frozen worms, and a couple of them kind of revived and started eating. And so the meme caption underneath is like, "This is not a good year for that. Refreeze them." So. Maybe the worm pandemic will, I don't know, but let's.
Yeah, I don't know that I believe that meme.
I don't care if it's true or not. It sounds positively science fiction-y.
Yeah, especially since the picture of the worm looks exactly like the worm from Dune. So,
where do you think?
Hey, Gus is back. Oh my gosh, that's great. Hey, Gus.
I haven't heard from Librarian Gus for quite a time. Welcome back to the fold, friend.
Yeah, it's because he's getting his kids off to school in the morning. So, yeah, great to have you with us. Okay, so we're wrapping up the year on Fascism Friday optimistically, an optimistic Fascism Friday. Which is sort of like an oxymoron.
But. And we don't mean it like the way neckbeard bros on Reddit say, you know what? Hitler wasn't a good guy, but he had some good ideas. We're not going that direction.
No.
With this positive spin.
No. No, it's not a positive spin on fascism at all. But what it is a recognition that fascism arises actually out of a sort of desperation.
Mm-hmm.
So it's people, I mean, the people who are instituting fascism may not be desperate. They're often just wanting to grab power, but they see that there's this desperation out there in society.
Mm-hmm.
And so they use that as an opportunity to grab power. And so the silver lining in that is that there is desperation because there's something else brewing that could be positive, that is a threat to usually to the powers that be.
Yeah, and the old adage from, I think it's George Orwell, that fascism is capitalism plus murder. Which I don't entirely agree with because capitalism is already murder, but right. The insight is that fascism is capitalism under threat. And so the thing is like, well, what's the threat? And oftentimes, and this is where, this is the progressive liberal divide and even more the liberal radical divide, is that still liberalism is committed to saving capitalism.
Right.
So, and this is why leftists will often accuse liberals of really just aiding and abetting fascists, is because the radical will say, look, they feel threatened. We don't want to like chill them out. We want to find, like, we want to lean into the thing that's threatening them, which is usually some form of socialism or radical alternative or revolution. But the silver lining, of course, is like, well, if they're feeling threatened, then we're doing something right.
Right. And see, at this point, if we had, you know, a super high tech production team in the back, we'd have a picture of Joe Biden appear on the screen as you were saying all of that.
Yeah. Dear God. Well, and so just to get crabby and cynical, like Biden is this great example. Like, there's some good things that have gotten through. People are acting as though the progressives are the enemy or like slowing it down. But the only reason these things happen is because of progressive agitation.
Yeah.
And, exactly. But even still, like people, you can't even complain about the fact that like Biden is worse about asylum seekers than Trump. Mm-hmm. Things like this you can't point out because it's like, no. And so we're at the end of kind of this big Western imperial project, it seems like, and climate change is a real big crisis. I don't really want to just kind of chill out the anxieties and then kick the can another generation down the road for another fascism to emerge. And that's even in a best case scenario if the moderates get their way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To me, the silver lining is like, okay, now, and this is always the hard thing. So like, you know, with Christianity in decline and particularly among white, like white Christianity is in decline, mainline denominations are tanking, the economy is crap for them. And when this happens, to me, this is always the moment of opportunity to innovate and do something different. But what happens is every institution then clings to its conservative base in order to maintain its primary cash flow. Mm-hmm. And then what that does is that sort of like, let's meet conserve so that we can keep going, almost always stifles the good thing that could be happening. And this is kind of like the same moment we're in now. Like, do we want to just conserve what we have because we're afraid of something like, we're afraid of Trump happening again, or are we going to take the opportunity to really imagine alternatives?
Yeah. And the church is an incredible example of this because you now have these mainline organizations, right? And so I'll just, let's just use the Presbyterian Church as an example. So the PCUSA is divided into these things called presbyteries, which are kind of the equivalent of states in the United States. So there are these geographic locations that, oversee churches in those areas. And so the presbytery that I belong to, which is the Presbytery of the Northern Plains, which is basically North Dakota and a little slice of Northwest Minnesota.
I mean, just to interject this, that's now, yes. If you say Presbyterian, you say Presbytery of the Northern Plains, that sounds boring. But if you imagine a wizarding world, and there was something called the Presbytery of the Northern Plains, that sounds pretty badass. So just context matters.
Yeah, there we go.
The Presbytery of the Northern Plains.
Yes, it's where the wizards are. They continue to be in massive decline. We're closing churches all the time. We got fewer and fewer full-time pastors. The one of the biggest churches in the presbytery left because they don't want to be fully inclusive of LGBTQIA people. And yet the presbytery just has more and more money in the bank that they're hoarding, right? And so I got to the presbytery in 2000, so it's been 21 years. They now have 3 times the amount of money in the bank that they had when I got here.
while they're also in decline,
because they just hoard this money and they put it in, stock funds, and so it's been growing, and they've been doing less and less. And So it's the same few people that have control of the presbytery. And, you know, and that's one of the things in these institutions is what we were talking about. So people who are opportunists for power, they kind of gather around these institutions and these pots of money, and they take control of them. And they basically turn it into sort of, you know, jobs for life or whatever for a few people. And then if you come along and you say, well, let's innovate, let's do something different. Let's, you know, I don't know, hire some rogue person to you know, go around and do different things with church. They're just like, no, because we don't have any money and we need to hold on to this. And it's very, very bizarre. And these institutions will all die with huge numbers of resources, having never actually attempted anything innovative. And, you know, the innovators are just out there doing different things, doing their own things. But the fascism is also kind of this ossification, right? It's like they literally turn into stone. I mean, some of these ancient texts and stories about people turning into stone, or, you know, Lot's wife turning into salt or whatever, it's like you actually cease being human because you are so obsessed with just keeping the status quo in a certain way. Mm-hmm. And you see this all over the place. All right.
Ms. Danger writes, fascists are opportunists. You know, I want to belabor that point a little bit because it might seem just so obvious to people. But I, part of like what we see happen, so I can't remember the I believe she's a senator from Arizona, the woman. Her name escapes me, but kind of generally seen as somewhat of an activist, gets into power, then shifts hard right for a Democrat. And, you know, and this is the problem, like with people who are careerists, or like we tell the story about, like, I want my daughter to grow up believing she can be president. I'm like, I don't want to elect someone who spent their entire life wanting to be in power.
Right.
Because the thing is, becomes about having the power. And then we assume that if we get the right sort of person in power, that all the things that they represent symbolically will become the center of power, and there'll be this disruption of how power flows. And that's not how systems work. People play the script that the role prescribes for them.
And she's a perfect example of this, because if you listen to what she has said over the years is, well, I have to shift hard right to get things done. Right. And that's what she has consistently said each time she has gotten more and more conservative, is that, well, this is how I have to get things done. Well, why is it that shifting right gets things done within that system? Well, it's because the people that have all the money that are bankrolling her and all these other folks are telling them how to get things done. And you can bet that the things that are getting done are helping those people, not the average folk, you know. And we see this just everywhere in America. You know, I was just thinking about this with COVID, right? And what our current approach to COVID is, which is basically the fuck it approach, like just, you know, everybody will get COVID at some point. And I think, well, okay, so here we are, the richest country in the world for a long time, and we accept that we have shitty healthcare. Mm-hmm. We accept that tens of thousands of people die of gun violence every year. We accept that we have thousands of unhoused people in all of our cities. We accept that we have shitty education. We accept the fact that, you know, we can't lift people out of poverty. And now we accept that tens of thousands of people die of COVID. And it's, I mean, that is the getting things done that this woman wants to advocate for.
It's, and kind of like, it's, It's like when people say, you know, when you start saying, well, we should look into alternatives. Like, no, capitalism is the most effective thing that we've ever had. It's the best thing. It's like, well, how's it actually working for us? Right. And people will point, and this is why, if we step back and look at the ecosystem, I'm going to bring it all in today, like Steven Pinker and Joel B. Pieberson.
The great Jordan mystery Peterson. Man yeah. that only I have not heard of.
A lot of people love, but the reason why some of us think, well, no, they're just, you know, there's fascist adjacent is because what they ultimately, their message is, actually, everything's actually better as long as we stay the Western imperial trajectory. And those of us who know how that plays out know that leads towards fascism. And so when these people are saying, no, we need to go, we need to regress to this point, it's kind of feeding it. And so this opportunistic thing, like, you know, it's really important to think about. We have so many voices in our head telling us we need to be successful, and the script provided for success is provided to us by a society that is inevitably fascistic mm-hmm. in a world such as ours. And so this appeal, like, to me, when someone says, I have to do this in order to be successful in my career, it's really hard for me to see that as fundamentally different. And this is going to sound hyperbolic. It's really hard for me not to hear them saying the same thing as Eichmann saying, I cannot be a war criminal because I was just following orders. So like when pastors say, I'm sorry, I know the church is supposed to be revolutionary, but I have a pension and a job, and so I can't speak the truth. I have to play it safe and maintain continuity. Feel sad for me because I'm not going to proclaim the gospel because I'm worried about my job. It's like, look, yeah, you're a small fry, so I'm not as upset at you, but that's still a link in the chain. So anyways, and
all right, we've got some comments.
Ellen writes in this, the parentheses means it should be whispered. You also can't point out that breaking some ceiling isn't actually great. And she is a cop who has locked up more poor, nonviolent men and women.
Yeah, it's true. Definitely not.
Can't do that. Tracy writes, why do I feel the need now to exclaim, you shall not pass?
That's right.
He can't bring up wizards anymore without saying that. And
that's true.
Because of the majestic acting capacity of Ian McKellen and the grandeur of that film centered our lexicon. Michelle writes, that's disgusting. The opportunistic stuff, for sure. Gus writes, I love Rebecca Solnit's idea that both optimism and pessimism are deterministic like a lotto ticket and thus call for inaction. Just sit on the couch either way. Hope is like a fire axe in a burning building. It's radical potential. I agree. Like, I tend to think optimism or pessimism are generally not helpful.
Yeah. And I mean, one of the ways that Buddhism talks about that is that it says that oftentimes we bounce between idealism and nihilism, and that both of those are highly unrealistic, sort of dissociated states. Mm-hmm. And that a radical realism, which is willing to engage the world as it is, which then opens up the possibility of an enlightened world, that's the only way that we can engage things in a way that's going to be helpful.
Michelle writes, fuck that shit. I don't know what the context is, but you know what?
That's just always a good thing to say.
I'm sure there are t-shirts that already say fuck that shit, but like, if angry and ineffective is a t-shirt, that should be our next one. There we
go. I think CK would love that shirt. He'd order a case of them.
James Wright, I have this issue right now. We have money to try something from one of our members, but what they really want to do is restore the windows.
Exactly.
Oh my god. Oof. I mean, windows are nice. Yeah. I mean, I love being able to look outside without feeling cold wind blow into my face, but still mm-hmm. it's such an uninspiring mm-hmm. use of church resources.
Yeah. Well, and you know, and as I said, this is just endemic. You know, there's so many of these church organizations, and when you were talking earlier about the liberalism just propping up things and being fascism adjacent, and I mentioned this on Wednesday. I mean, the way that the Lilly Foundation has related to the church is a perfect example of this, right? I mean, so first of all, there's a great paradox here in the fact that, or an irony in the fact that the money that Eli Lilly has been sending to the church through their charitable foundation is all coming mostly from their profits from Prozac, which, you know, people need because they're so depressed in our society, right? So you would think that, you know, if the church was really doing its job and people were really engaged in life-giving spiritual community, that there would actually be less depression. But anyway, be that as it may, so they have spent, and you know, I'm absolutely sure that it's way over $1 billion now. It's probably several $1 billion over the last number of decades, literally trying to save the mainline church. And they've given tons of this money to seminaries, to universities, to large churches. And this is one of the really interesting things about how they've dispersed this money is that...
Prozac to the pulpit.
That's right. You know, one of the ways they've dispersed this money is always through very large organizations, right? So if you are a small organization, if you're trying to do anything really innovative and very kind of nimble or out there, very radical, you cannot get any money from Lilly, right? And they have spent all this money, and the mainline church has simply continued to tank, right? And so, so this has been a great example of where, you know, a giant institution has felt that there is this threat, right? The mainline church tanking in society, and has poured unbelievable amounts of resources into supporting that institution, trying to prop that up against this threat, and, you know, has really completely failed, and has not been willing to say, okay, you know, let's actually start giving out all this money to, you know, to fringe radical kinds of groups that want to do church in a completely different kind of way, separate from these other institutions. That has been viewed as totally unacceptable.
And just to kind of make it super plain, like these, when people lament the decline of Christianity in the United States, I feel like oftentimes what they're lamenting is the decline of white supremacy. Like,
yes.
Because that's the threat
that these institutions are under.
Is a threat that the provocative and powerful ideas, statements, and actions of Jesus Christ will fall into obscurity? No.
No.
is there a concern that people aren't heeding the words of Jesus thoughtfully enough and creating alternative radical communities? No, they're not worried about that not happening. It's about the main line, which is the chaplain to the state, and white supremacy in America maintains strength for a set of values that are tied up inextricably with patriarchy and white supremacy. And so, like, we have to be honest about that. Like, what's being maintained? And so all these articles that are, there's always this tinge of maintaining power between, like, here's how we keep our church from declining. I'm like, you know what? I think it'd be great if I were a wizard, just to bring in the wizarding theme. Nice. Call me Gandalf the Lily White Presbyterian.
Nice. That's just like there. So many mixed metaphors.
Yeah, there. I love it. If I were that kind of wizard, I would bankrupt every major predominantly white denomination in America. And I think that'd be good. So stop fighting for it. In other words, fuck it, dude. Let's go bowling. That could also be a t-shirt.
Yeah, bowling for dollars.
Bowling for Jesus. Kathleen writes, thank you for these broadcasts. It helped me get through the loss of my daughter. That's sad, and it also means a lot to know that we've been doing has been helpful and mattered. I will wait anxiously for the next Proudcod. I know you're saying podcast, but I want my brain is thinking of t-shirts. I just want to have a t-shirt that says Proudcod.
And everybody will look very strangely at
like, what is that?
Like, what is that?
I know. It's just a whole line of t-shirts that have things that are nonsensical. It's just, there's a whole burgeoning cottage industry here. Where are we at? Okay, Ms. Danger writes, like a friend of mine left a church because they refused to take him seriously when he said that they should do outreach and talk to homeless and buy supplies for said community, and they balked. Yes,
yeah,
that happens a lot. Like, this conservatism is really pervasive in churches. Like, they don't care. Yeah, and even like very liberal, like, so even the most progressive of churches have this, and some of it just makes sense. Like, of course, you have limited resources, you have to prioritize. And to me, like, I don't like autocratic systems. So, of course, you want to have some sort of congregational discern, like some sort of consensus or just democratic approach. In our society where we're formed by this system, there's then therefore going to always be this tendency towards the lowest common denominator thinking. Like, this is always like, just to talk systems and decision-making in churches. And I've experienced this a lot. The line between lowest common denominator thinking and deep discernment is fuzzier than we like to think. And it takes a lot of energy, focus, and commitment to do discernment. And oftentimes in systems, we're too tired, we're too scared to take risks, and so we'll go to lowest common denominator thinking, and even in the best of communities, that will always lead towards a conservative impulse. And so this is a systemic kind of big, it's like a kind of a core problem. And I've never met a church that excels spectacularly at solving that problem, but I have seen some that do better than others, and it's, and you don't learn a damn thing about that in seminary.
No. All right. A few more comments as we're coming to the end of our time.
Cheryl writes, the threat to the powers that be currently is critical thinking by educated people, community education, 2 books to recommend, Another Way is Possible, and The Universal Schoolhouse. Derry Hanman and James Moffat, Democratic Schools with More Guided Self-Directed Learning. Zachary Stein has a great book, too, called Education in a Time Between Worlds. Of his list of 13 social miracles is mutual respect between all major world religions. Thanks for that.
Hey, and it's a good thing that librarian Gus is on today, so there's some books to add to the library. Yeah, and then Gus has a comment about his ministry here, which I think is a great example of this, looking at what are the positive things that are emerging as a result of these kinds of threats.
Gus writes, I appreciate the ELCA, Evangelical Lutheran Church of America, which for those who are not in the know, evangelical in the old school sense, which does not mean,
yes.
So it just means Protestant, basically. The Protestant Lutheran Church of America, congregation that has sponsored my homeless outreach work. I'm one of a dozen things they are doing, parking lot transformed to support housing, clothing closet, et cetera, but that is not the norm. No, and I'm grateful, like,
yeah,
I don't want to diminish the fact that this is, it's hard, like when most churches don't have excess cash flow. So it takes a lot of faith and courage to support things like what Gus is doing. And I've benefited from the support of congregations and denominational support to do some radical things, not for very long. But, you know, these things do happen. Yeah.
Well, and what's interesting to me, you see, about the fact that Gus, that's happening with you out of an ELCA congregation out west, is that, obviously the ELCA is mostly concentrated in the Midwest. Here in Minnesota is like the Lutheran Vatican. And the ELCA out west, I mean, the synod out there is one of the most under threats in terms of dissolution, declining numbers, not going to last that long. And I don't think it's a coincidence that an ELCA church within that environment has really, decided to embrace a number of very different ministries and alternatives. And so I think that that's the interesting thing about this sort of silver lining in a time of fascism, is that you often see the most radical things, right, happening literally on the fringes of empire, right? And that the place where things are falling apart the most is often then where there's enough space for something different to happen. And that can work the other way too, that sometimes the place where things are falling apart, are the places where the resources for fascism come into the central part of the government. And we see that a lot going on with what's happening in rural America. Right, so these things are going on at the same time, which is one of the issues that makes this kind of discernment you're talking about very confusing, right? Because there's so much turmoil and things are so chaotic, and this is one of the reasons why spiritual practice in these kinds of times are even more helpful, because that's continually bringing us back, helping us to see more clearly. Because it's hard to see clearly. I mean, when you have constant disruption and confusion and chaos, and when you have the powers that be trying to confuse you and manipulate you, we were talking again before the start about what happened here with the police election. There was so much misinformation, confusion, outright lies being sown by the powers that be to get people to vote against this thing. And there was a lot of money brought to bear. I mean, both Ash and I were commenting, we were getting flyers every single day, sometimes two or three flyers every single day telling us to vote no on this thing. And then a whole raft of crap, as to why to vote no on this thing. So committing to vision during these difficult times is a real spiritual discipline, and is something that we really want to encourage everybody in. Mm-hmm. All right, last few comments. Oh, CK appeared.
Sloan writes, the resources are there. These denominations have the money and endowments. They don't need Lily to save them.
This is absolutely true.
Gus writes, but I'm preaching on Sunday and the text is Mark 13, the forecasting of the destruction of the temple. And there's an impulse to avoid talking about the destruction of St. Mark's. Ellie, I don't know how to pronounce it. Read Mao and Freire. I mean, I like Freire. Mao, the Little Red Book is... paper tiger of capitalism and everything. That's good, but I'm more of a Freire person. CK writes, hey, just tuned in, had a flat tire, fuck fascism, and all the construction going on, fuck the police.
Fuck this shit. CK, we were talking earlier about how we're going to make a t-shirt, fuck this shit, and you are going to buy a case of them.
Yeah.
So that's a good place to end.
Fuck this shit.
And we wish all of you well in these waning weeks of 2021. Thank you so much for all of your support and comments and tuning in. And love you all. And next year's a new year.
We'll see you next year. And I hope 2022 starts off with reasons for hope.
Yes.
And if not, we'll be back to gripe about...
All right, stay clear of the robot birds.
Yep.
Bye. They're always watching.